From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Broadcasting live on Thursday, the 23rd of February, from the studios of Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Your roll of the Dice Men tonight has a minus one modifier.
Oh, really?
With Trent and Garth.
Yeah.
Well, having to bring in a guest, actually.
We do. We have to have an intro for someone special.
A little bit later in the show, guests who come in and talk tabletop games. Those little rituals of cardboard, plastic and glue through which we transform ourselves from boring suburbanites into world dictators, wizards and wankers. Garth, good to see you.
Yes, it is great to be here. Thank you very much.
Which category you fall into.
I think I fall into at least two or three of those. Right. Now, it is the 23rd of February. It is episode 154. Oh, my God, we are old. There is Trent. There is myself. We are going to start, as we do, with what we've been playing this week. And then, basically, we're going to have a chat to our very special guest. Should I introduce him now or later, Trent? What do you reckon? Keep him secret? Keep him safe?
It's really exciting listening to me make up my mind.
It isn't it? Yeah, so okay. I will just let you cut to a song and we might introduce him a little bit later on. You are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Oh, well done. You remembered.
Well, that was The National with Mistaken for Strangers. You are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 with Garth and Trent.
FM.
There we go. Thank you very much. Now, Trent, it's your turn. What have we been playing this week?
Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn. Sorry, I haven't pronounced that correctly. Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn! I feel like whenever you read the name of the game, it should be in all caps.
Yeah?
You know? It's from Plat Hat Games by Isaac Vega.
Yeah.
From 2015, he put this one out. Isaac Vega, of course, designer of
Dead of Winter.
This one is a card game set on the planet Argaea, where the Phoenixborn, Phoenixborn, who rose to champion humanity against the Chimera menace, now get bogged down in a pointlessly complex backstory that justifies people pretending to be wizards and fragging the magical crap out of each other.
That sounds great fun.
Which is, yeah, look, this is Magic the Gathering in a non-collectible form.
Correct.
You're playing a Phoenixborn, in brackets wizard, and you've got lots of cards. You've got a deck of cards that you can customize. You've got or not, it's up to you.
Yeah.
You've got lots of dice, which makes it a little bit different. And it's supposedly, and this is one of the big the other differences with Magic and a lot of other similar games like this, it plays up to four.
No, it doesn't.
Supposedly.
No, it doesn't.
No, it does not. This is, at its heart, a two-player game.
It does not play four.
And if you remember nothing else of what we say about Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn for the next 10 minutes... It's a two-player game, all right?
The limited amount of research I did on this particular break, because this is your break, Trent,
yeah,
is I wrote what I do like and what I don't like. And the very first thing that you can see on the screen that I don't like, never play it with more than two. All caps, never.
So what's a Phoenixborn? All right, so there are these dudes on the card. Cole Rorquin is one name. Jessa Nani, she's the Bloodwood Queen. I liked her. She was pretty cool. She had like a skull face and stuff. Maini Viper, she's from the Snake Thin Silver. So you assign yourself a Phoenixborn. You've got a deck of 30 cards combined of cards unique to your character, although there's not many of those.
No, there isn't.
In Ashes. And there are lots of general cards that you can pick from when you're building your deck. You then can make a separate deck of conjuration cards. What are they, Garth?
Well, conjurations are these unique and special allies or things that you bring to your battlefield.
Units is the technical term.
And you bring them through the spell board that you have. Now, each player, as well as having your Phoenixborn card, will then have two rows of cards that will form the front row being their battlefield, i.e. their frontline fighters who are going to lay down some smack, And then you've got the second sort of second line of attack or defense, which is your spell board, which is where you will place your spells to be able to bring forth these conjurations, be them magical beasts or mice in your case.
Yes, we'll get to that.
They're these very heavy duty mice.
Let me get to the mice.
All right.
Right? Okay. And of course, look, there's rules on the numbers and things that you can have in your deck and all that kind of stuff. You bring your deck in, you put down your Phoenixborn, you're trying to beat the crap out of each other to actually wound each other's Phoenixborn, the requisite number of hit points.
Mm-hmm.
You choose your first five cards, so it's not a random draft when you first.
Well, there's
draw
two
your
ways
hand.
You can do it. You can either have the first five predetermined by you, which is the suggested setup. Or you can go a little bit crazy and just choose five.
Mm-hmm. You roll your dice, and then you have at each other. And the dice are a huge, huge part of this game because they basically power your abilities. Different symbols on there,
yep.
Some of which are rare, some of which are common, and you can power various actions accordingly.
Yeah, so there's sort of the three different types of power or mana, I guess, that you'd be using for your abilities. And this is where it becomes a little bit different from your standard deck builder or two-player fighting card game because it's got two limitations. The first one is the limitation of the cards that you've got in your hand. The second limitation is the dice that you've rolled and what you can therefore do with the cards in your hand.
And you've got to sort of spend those quite judiciously because how this plays out, every turn you get to take one major action and one minor action or one side action.
Yeah.
So playing a card, and it could be a spell or placing a unit or activating a conjuration, that could be a major action. And then a side action might be just activating a dice power or maybe meditating, which is basically burning cards to change the face on your dice. And you've only got your initial hand of five and those dice from the first pool that you rolled to play through. So you've got to spend those as you go. You can pass.
Yep.
You can come back in later in the round, but if all players pass simultaneously, then that's the end of the round.
Both players.
Both, thank you, yes.
Yes.
I forgot there for just a moment. So you've got to spend those resources quite cleverly. There is a lot of love for this game.
There is. There is a huge amount of love for this.
It's rated 310 on BoardGameGeek.
Which is high.
Overall.
Yeah.
That is bloody high, yeah. Mm. And I think it's with good reason because I'm going to put it out there. I really like it.
Okay.
It's flexible.
Yep.
Way more flexible than something like your Netrunner or your certainly Magic. It's very strategic and there is a lot of choice every turn. Heaps of choices to make.
Yep.
And you're powerful right away. That ability to choose your first five cards, if that's the way you agree to play, you can pull out your five Top Gun cards and really start kicking butt straight away.
Exactly. Now, look, it comes from Isaac Vega, who has had a couple of really good games. I mean, obviously Dead of Winter with John Gilmore is probably his best-known game.
Is this the same artist?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, great art.
So the art... Now, there's the two lead artists, David Richards and Fernanda Suarez. They've done art for Dead of Winter, which is pretty amazing. They've done art for Mice and Mystics. They've also done art for Summoner Wars, which we might mention again later on.
Plat Hat games don't make ugly games.
Not at all. So this is a beautiful-looking game, and you just look at the box art itself and you go, I want to play this because it is fantastic. Now, there's so much to theoretically like about this game.
Controversial.
And, you know, it's good that you've got that out there for you because I enjoyed it. But it's certainly not a game that I would go back to again and again.
No!
Apart from as a curiosity to go and enjoy those different Phoenixborn characters.
All right, wait, look, not only is it easy to learn, it's got really good, I mean, you know, the art sucks you in, the iconography is quite simple. I think the player guides that are provided with the game and
of
the rule
book, there are so many.
Oh, get over it. It's not that hard. It's true, though, that not everything is apparent until you start getting into it, but I think that makes repeat plays quite rewarding. And we've talked about how frustrating that is for us who play new games every week.
Indeed, yeah.
All right. So you mentioned the mice.
Yes.
Okay.
That's Gilda, isn't it?
Gilda the mouse. So I'm playing Myeni Viper, the snake in silver. She has a spell, Summon the Silver Snake. I figured out at the end of our game that what I should have been doing is sacrificing my mice, essentially
to feed your snake.
Feeding them to the snake to make the snake more powerful. And it's only once you start playing a little bit that little combos like that actually start.
Yes.
Start.
And on that note, it has to be said that, look, my first introduction to this was as a four player, and the four Phoenixborn that we played were very, very different. And that is something I really do like about it, that you do get a sense of, this is my hero, he does this or that, and your hero does something completely different. And I enjoy that, because there are too many games where you choose your player, but really you're doing four versions of the same thing.
Oh, but God, four players were such a drag.
Yeah, well, that's why this is a two-player game.
Yeah.
So do not play it with more than two. Now, we've said that the art is fantastic. I really, really enjoy the dice side of this as well. I really enjoy the rolling 10 dice every single turn, which is fantastic. But then my immediate criticism is that that then leads to the downtime while everyone has to go and manage their hand and go, well, I want to do this card, which is going to be my first main action. It's going to cost me that dice, and then I'm going to do that
but
side
again,
action, which will do
if
this.
If it's only two players, then it's not really a big deal. I've played this four times. I feel like I've barely scratched the surface with it, and I would really dearly love to spend more time with it and get to know these decks. I think there's a lot of game just in this one box.
Yes.
It has been expanded,
yeah,
although not at a rate that you might expect from other living card games or expandable card games.
No. However, only yesterday it was announced at the New York Toy Fair that there's two deluxe expansions that have just been released and are to be expected later on in the year. So that's a good sign for the game.
Yeah, this is interesting, actually, because there's been a bit of... Okay, Plat Hat Games got acquired by Asmodee.
As did everyone.
Right, okay.
Yes.
I mean, if we sit still long enough...
I'm hoping.
It'll happen to us.
Someone needs to give us the money at some point, surely.
Fingers crossed. So the expansions for Ashes weren't coming out at a huge rate of knots,
no.
Certainly not in comparison to, well, almost anything.
Everything, yep.
And it went quiet for a little while, and now I noticed just, a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
There was an announcement for some deluxe expansions. So Asmodee, of course, they've got Fantasy Flight Games under their wing in North America now as well, so maybe they're learning a thing or two. Now's not the best time to get into this game, but I think it'd be a bit of a shame if people overlooked it.
However,
as
a standalone, just go and buy the box, it does contain a huge amount of game. I had a look last night on a couple of good sites. You can get it in Australian dollars for between 70 and 80 bucks, which for the style of game that it is a really, really, really good price. You don't have to go down and get expansion after expansion because there is a lot of replayability just in those different Phoenixborn and how they'll all interact with each other.
My impression is there's a little bit less of a meta game.
Yeah.
Going on here. And also, like, as far as deck building goes, normally in an LCG, there's a lot of restrictions in what you can and can't put in your deck based on what identity you're going to assume, what Phoenixborn you're going to assume. Not in Ashes.
No.
There's one unique card. You can put three copies of that in your deck, and then you've got complete carte blanche to do anything else you want. Now, I want to raise Summoner Wars again.
Okay.
I've not played this with Leon as yet.
All right.
Or did I? I can't remember, honestly.
Well, I certainly have, and it is certainly the elephant in the room for me.
I've not played Summoner Wars either.
Yeah, well, I've not played Magic. So there you go.
Oh, my God.
I know.
And you're doing a podcast.
I'm doing a podcast.
So
as I slowly burn.
Leon's point about this, and he's not here to explain it fully, was why would you play this when Plat Hat Games has already got Summoner Wars?
Yes, and most importantly, Summoner Wars, the master set, which has so much more in it. And look, having played them both, and I agree with Leon. I agree with Leon. It's there. It's in recorded podcast history now. Because, again, a big point I said is this game needed? Because there is Summoner Wars, there is Magic, there's Mage Wars as well. There are so many fantastic two-player little card games that I don't know whether this game has a space, except that it is beautiful and the dice added a new mechanic, and I like that is there. I'm concerned that it says and feels like it can play anywhere from half an hour to several hours, And that's not what you want from this light, quick deck-building style game. I want to be able to play it and have half an hour of really great fun and then move on. And you do not get this with this game. Even when we played, last night? You know, we played it for a good 45 minutes and we'd both only taken maybe two or three hit points off our actual Phoenix Spawn.
Yeah, but we haven't spent the time that you need to spend with it to get to know the combos, and it's all about the combos.
Yes, and this
and
is
where...
And
they're satisfying combos.
They are. However, I will relay it straight back to my very first game of Summoner Wars, which took 30 to 35 minutes, and it was all done and dusted, and it was so much fun.
Well, do you think Summoner Wars really has... Okay, fine, there's, you know, 100 billion factions that you can play.
And they all feel unique.
But is that the only thing that makes it replayable?
No, I think there is a lot of strategy because you're not just playing cards, it's where you play them, and you've got a bit of a movement, almost a top-down board working with it. Yeah, look, I really did have some fun with this game when it was two players, but with four, no, just disinvite two people who you've invited over so that you can play it as two players.
I think this is a good game for people who aren't us.
Yeah.
Right? Who maybe don't have a huge amount of disposable income,
mm-hmm.
can...
Well, there's probably going to be one copy going soon. Are you getting rid of yours? Or is it Mark's? We should get rid of it while he's not here.
It is Mark's copy. Fantastic. Actually, yes. And I think that with a bit of time getting to know the combos and the decks, that going back to playing three or four would actually be a lot more fun.
No.
And a lot quicker.
No. Sorry, I can elaborate a bit more.
So basically, you don't want to say anything negative, but no.
It is a classic two-player game that is expanded to four to sell more copies, and it does not work, in my opinion.
I quite like this, and I want to play more. It's for those who find Magic, Netrunner, or basically anything by Fantasy Flight Games a bit exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
I think is basically perfect. I rest my case.
We better go to a song so I can swear at you off air, because what you've been saying is lies.
Are you going to introduce our guest in a moment, or shall we tell everybody who it is now?
I think we should tell everybody that we are very lucky to have one Mr. David Scott, who is the public relations guru, the media magnate, the all-around good guy of Good Games, who basically goes out there and talks not only himself up, but the games that rule and make.
No one else wanted to talk to us, so they just sent him. All right. We'll bring him in a moment. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You're listening to The Dice Man Cometh. Local lad, Adam Cousins, and beautiful people. And speaking of which, it's The Dice Man Cometh.
It is.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Okay, get off Kickstarter, Garth. Come on, we got a guest.
Oh, but there's so much good stuff. Anyway, David, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
That's all right, we've had you. No.
Done.
Okay, there
David
we go.
David Scott from Rule and Make Games, based out of Brisbane, but just bigger than Brisbane.
It's. I want to say international. It actually is international.
Spreading its tentacles...
I think we'd prefer the term expanding the family, right. Which actually now that I say it out loud, reminds me a bit of the Mafia, which is completely not intentional. But yeah, it's a very, very, very collegiate expansion. Yeah.
That's great. So you're an expandable game company.
Yes. Like an IKEA flat pack.
That sounds nicer. Intriguing.
Well, actually, Rule and Make, they do push themselves as Australia's number one publisher, biggest publisher. Oh. I've seen that written somewhere on a website, which I imagine was probably copywritten by your good self.
No, well, I mean, I'm not going to dob. I can't dob some of the family, and that'd lead to consequences. No, look, I think it's not something we actively use as our main selling point. It might be the case. I think what I've found, and I've obviously been a bit of a newbie to the tabletop publishing and design scene in Australia, it's been growing rather rapidly, as you guys know.
Mm.
And what I've found is there's a really high degree of collegiality with it. People are just so helpful and so keen. There's egos, but there's not a lot of big egos. There's no people swinging in going, well, I've been here for 10 years and I know all about games and you should just not do it like that.
You've only just met Trent, so, you know, you haven't had a huge amount of opportunity to see him in his full swing yet.
No, look, so...
I'll just be over here.
So, no, it's... So that hasn't really been a big part of it. When I sort of joined the group and started, you know, started really small and started helping out with the social media and things like that. Certainly the focus is not about Rule and Make as an entity. It was, and you know, it was more about talking about, you know, we've got fun games, or we think we have really fun games, and we have a good group of people contributing to those.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things I sort of brought to them. I was saying, you know, in my experience, sort of my day job, it's all about, you know, don't push you, push the content. Because people will interact with that more than an entity. People
sure.
don't so much care about, you know, Asmodee or Rule and Make or Fantasy Flight. Yeah,
they no, help. Unless they're really, really sad and do podcasts. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. People are more interested, you know, people are more likely to say, oh, I've played Magic, not, oh, I've played the latest Fantasy Flight game. Yeah.
Well, let's get to some of those games that Rule and Make is so well known for. And being a gentleman of a certain width, clearly, I enjoy eating burgers, so we may as well start with arguably the number one burger game in existence today, which is Burger Up.
I'd challenge someone to have that argument with me. I'd love that challenge. That would be fantastic.
Number one food-related game?
Oh, I don't know.
That is a challenge.
Well, now we're getting into food chain
magnate. Yeah, right.
So, look, this came out a couple of years ago as a successful Kickstarter, as so many Rule and Make games have been.
Yep.
We were lucky enough to get a copy a year or so ago, and we took it to BorderCon, which was the very first game we actually played for BorderCon 2016 with Melissa Rogerson, and it was so much fun. Now, that was a beautiful-looking game. How's it been going over the last 12, 18 months of Burger Up-dom?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's been fantastic. And Burger Up has a very special place in my heart, personally. It was my first Kickstarter for Rule and Make. I hadn't really officially joined the family at that point. I was still just a sort of a gamer on the side, and I'd come across them, and I was like, man, like you, I love burgers.
Yep.
And and I could play a game about burgers, and this burger game looks so bloody delicious.
Yeah.
Like, I would play the hell out of this. And everyone's been saying that. I think the feedback we've had consistently from casual fans, from people related to us, from, you know, podcasts and reviewers has all been, wow, this game looks and just pops off the page.
Can you tell us what it means to have a hit like that in terms of having to get it printed, get it distributed, to actually put stock on the shelves? What does that actually mean day to day in the office?
Well, for us, what it's meant is a second printing,
right?
Which I think is a first. I'd have to, you know, don't quote me on it, but I think it's a first for us to have a second printing so soon. So that only just came through in the last month or so.
Yeah, wow,
so,
that's great.
And is it a business question for me to? I mean, you don't have to answer things if you don't want to, but is it a business question for me to ask you how many you would get done in a print run?
Yeah, look, I honestly wouldn't know the exact figures.
Sure.
What I know is that we get consistent activity sort of in our online order form.
Yeah.
And we only have a small repository. So the stock that we sort of maintain for our own, you know, for our own collection, for reviews and for those, you know, day-to-day sort of web sales is only a portion of what goes out to distributors like VR and goes into storefronts and things like that. I mean, I was in a shopping centre in Melbourne the other day and I came across it in one of the shops there.
Right.
So most of the stock goes out into retailers.
Okay, so from a factory in China?
Yeah, it is produced in China. And we've partnered with Greenbrier Games in the US. And they are doing a lot of the stuff on the US distribution side, which was not something we'd done previously.
Hmm.
And as you guys probably know, like, distribution in Australia is one thing. Distribution in the US is just, it's a whole new beast. And so having people on the ground like Greenbrier, who have done it a few times, know what they're doing, have a bit of an established presence, they've sort of helped us out on that front.
So in Australia, of course, very small population, the tyranny of distance, you know, a couple of big centres, and then there's everywhere else. We're constantly bitching about, you know, being down here at the bottom end of the bottom of the world. So in America, everything's just scaled up.
It's all delivered by drones these days, isn't it? That's what I keep reading.
Yeah, so I get a little company in Brisbane or, you know, anywhere that didn't have experience with that would just get overwhelmed.
And there's so much to wrap your head around. And I've come at it from a very narrow PR focus.
Sure.
So my big challenge has been when talking to Alan and Alistair, you know, two guys who founded Rule and Make, how do we try and boost the recognition of the games we produce and who we are, and trying to doing that internationally, but trying to do that with the unique selling point for us is we're on the other side of the world. Yep. Let's flip it. Let's turn it into a positive. You know, you there, Secret Cabal, you there, you know, Store X. Did you know that there is an Australian game company that has made a burger game that's actually quite good? And don't just take our word for it. Go and read online. One of the things I did the other day was I discovered that there is a restaurant in Nashville literally called Burger Up.
Oh, wow.
And I only discovered that because I was getting all this traffic on Instagram with the Burger Up hashtag, and I was using that for, you know, hey, another great game, and someone's posted this, and thanks for that, blah, blah, blah. And then all these photos of burgers and people smiling and posing, I'm like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
And so I got in contact with them and said, hey, you know, we have a game and you have a store and
hey, let's talk.
Yeah. And you know, International Burger Day is coming up in May, and so...
Oh, gee, I've got to mark that on my calendar.
So it's trying to find those nice little ins. You know, you're absolutely right. We're not going to be able to just sort of jump into, you know, America at any point and say, hey, we're willing to make, we've got good games. And they're like, yeah, sure. So we've got, you know, 50 people, as you said before, you know, you browse through Kickstarter and you find a million of them every day.
Exactly. But I do like that you've also put some of your games up on online sites like Tabletopia. So Burger Up was on there. I had a game of that with Leon not too long ago. Another one of the games, Skyward, is on there as well, which that also was a really successful Kickstarter by, was it Brendan Evans?
Brendan.
That's right. So that finished the last sort of third of last year?
Yeah, November last year. Yeah.
And how's that going?
Yeah, really, really good. So we're basically at the point of sort of about to swing into production. We've got the last few little tweaks to go. I think the sort of the final little bit has been sort of the metal coin.
Okay.
So I don't know if anyone has played Entropy.
Yes, definitely. Got the metal coin at home.
Exactly. So we're doing a similar sort of thing with Skywards. That's sort of been the last part of the production vetting process. So we'll be able to swing into fulfillment for our Kickstarter backers in about April, May, it's looking.
Yeah, fantastic.
And then that will mean that after that, it'll be retail version as well. So
yeah, so this is a little deck builder game that plays up to four players and has some really interesting mechanics, I think, in terms of how the cards are distributed between players.
Yeah.
And only a couple of days ago, I think, on Instagram or something, there was a new photo of the box art that had been done, and that was good to see that it's still progressing really, really nicely. Yeah.
I don't know anything about Skyward at all. I've not even seen it.
No, well,
what's the theme?
So it is
it's cities in the sky is sort of what we've been using as the badge.
Oh, you mean like Jack and the Beanstalk cities in the sky? Or?
Almost, yeah. So the idea is that there's a number of factions in town and all sort of on a planet, and they're all competing to be the first faction to launch the first city in the sky.
Okay.
There's a bit of a novella being developed that was sort of unlocked as one of the...
Really?
Yep, as one of the sort of Kickstarter stretch goals. Mm-hmm. So Peter C. Haywood.
Yep. Jellybean Games and a few others.
Dracula's Feast.
That's
and
whatnot. The one.
Yep. So he's written this novella, which I've not even seen myself, so I can't even spill the beans on that one for you. But that will be coming as part of the fulfillment, and that will go into the full detail. But yeah, in short, you are competing to be the first master builder, as it were, of the skybound city, Skywood.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Entropy,
yep.
Which was the first Rule and Make game, is that correct?
No, there was Rise to Power before that.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah, I think Rise to Power, certainly for me, is where I got Rule and Make sort of make-ified, I guess. I certainly became aware of them because this game was bloody hard to come by.
Mm.
It was really hard. It again, successfully funded on Kickstarter, but then trying to find a copy, it was like rare as hen's teeth.
And it was only a little deck of cards, wasn't it? I've played Rise to Power, but it's been a while.
So this one was, it's several decks of cards, actually.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah, but it's certainly not as small as something like Ninja Dojo Fight or even as small as Entropy or Enthropy, as Leon likes to say.
Entropy, because Entropy was a very small game, somewhere in the coup sort of social deduction sort of space. A very small target for Kickstarter, but it didn't skimp on the quality or on particularly on the art. It had that sort of really highfalutin, I don't know what you call it, but that sort of, I call it Numenera style art on the cards. Can you tell us about the challenges of those small games? Because look, obviously the guys, Alan and Alistair, were setting themselves small targets to start the company, but that would have also informed their design choices as well, I imagine. And then that that it's difficult with your marketing because you've only got a very small amount of shelf space as well.
Correct. And I think in my conversations with Alan and Alistair across the last couple of years and sort of with all of the guys, you know, the artists, the designers, everyone who sort of plays a part in that process, they're all sort of on board with sort of a couple of really key themes, and component quality is really important. So that's a big driver in how things are developed. The art, as you said, is also very important. We know that there is a big group of people out there who look at a Rule of Mate game and go, you know what, I know I'm going to get good card quality, I know I'm going to get really good art quality.
Yeah.
That's a big selling point. So that plays into the process most definitely. I think that was, just to diverge just quickly, that was a really wonderful and interesting thing about Skyward, is it was like three or four different artists doing it. You know, we had, you know, an overall sort of design artist, there was, you know, a character artist, there was background artist, and they all just worked together seamlessly to produce, you know, this product.
Not to mention a Rocket Cat artist.
Oh my God, the Rocket Cat. Team Rocket Cat.
Well, right. I mean, yeah, with Entropy, we were lucky enough to play one of the print and plays right at the start before it was even out, and to see the difference even in the look of the game from then.
I think it was photocopied, wasn't it?
It was photocopied and laminated expertly, but the final copy was just brilliant. Yeah. So look, we've done a fair bit of looking in the past now,
yep.
But how about the future? I mean, obviously, you know, Rule and Make has gone from strength to strength with the games it's produced. Mm-hmm. Obviously, looking forward to see the final version of Skyward. But what else have you got on the agenda? I know there's a few things you want to talk about.
Yeah, so, well, just quickly on Entropy, we're hoping to do a sort of a remix of Entropy 2.0. I know. So Entropy is very close to everyone's heart at Rule and Make. Certainly Alan and Alistair, they, you know, that was their baby. They designed that from the ground up. And as you said, it was sort of like the first real big, in inverted commas, air quotes, mm-hmm. Rule and Make game. It was the first game I played of Rule and Make. So yeah, there's a bit of plans in the background to sort of do a bit of a remix and sort of revisit what was good about it, but take on board some of the feedback that people have played after many play tests and try and keep the art the same way. But
expansion and reboot.
Yeah, little bit like that. So that's if we get time. I mean, there's so much else happening. I mean, many people probably know that we partnered with Table Tyrant Games middle of last year, and that's been fantastic. Those, both Rule and Make and Table Tyrant, largely based in Queensland. And I think Table Tyrant really brought a really sharp eye for a different corner of sort of game design and that sort of game design market in Queensland and Australia that Rule and Make didn't have the capacity to sort of really sort through when it came to submissions and possible ideas.
Right.
Yeah, because the first game that sort of was started was Smiths of Winterforge. Correct. Now, that was kickstarted last year.
Yep.
Funding was cancelled. It was pulled out before the date.
Yep.
Tell us what's happening with that.
Yep. So funding, that was sort of all full steam ahead before we sort of had got together. One of the things that was discussed when we got together with Aaron and Dylan, who are, you know, behind Table Tyrant, was, well, sort of what sort of things can we help with? And certainly Alan Alistair's experience in running Kickstarter campaigns and things like that. Also, in the background of that, because we'd been growing quite, you know, regularly, nicely, yep. along a pretty good trajectory, you know, we'd started to have discussions with organisations overseas. We managed to get to Essen last year.
Yes.
And actually be there in person and talk to some other, you know, publishers, distributors, designers and things like that. And being able to talk and show off games like Smith's, that was great for everybody. That was great for us to be able to say, oh, we've got a different style game that we know the people, we can work very closely with them. And for Smiths and the guys behind that, Aaron and Dylan, it was great. They got exposure at the same time as we did.
Fantastic.
But that was good because it was a feedback loop as well. And so that was a large part about pulling the Kickstarter and going, all right, we can do this again. We can do this again bigger and better.
Yep.
There wasn't a huge amount to change, but there were changes that could be made.
Well, what we'll do is, how about we throw to a song and we'll come back and you can help us announce what some of those changes are, hey?
Okay.
Is that all right?
I'll do my absolute best.
All right, wonderful. Well, you are listening to David Scott with The Dice Men Cometh. He's from Rule and Make. We're still from The Dice Men Cometh. It's still Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Here's a song.
You join us for another episode of Indian Devotional Tunes featuring Ravi Shankar and The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, or The Wheelers of Oz, if you like, with Why Don't You Love Me? Possibly because you spend far too much time playing tabletop games, you hopeless nerd.
Are you talking to me?
Well, I'm talking to sort of everybody in general.
It's a badge we wear with pride.
Yeah. Damn, do you hear that, David?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
the nerd, and You know, it used to be a dirty word, and now I just, it's such an honour.
Not anymore?
No. Yep. Love it.
And you are the first official employee of Rule and Make Games.
I'm not even really an employee, I think.
Well, are you paid in stock? Are
no,
you?
Not even that, really.
It's, or is it, or is it, is it just something to put on your Centrelink form?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
how does it work?
Do you know, So this, just to do a bit of biographical information. So my day job, I do PR for a university in Victoria.
Okay.
A large part of that PR involves issues management, reputation management, crisis communication.
Sure, you got to bring in that sweet, sweet student dollar. Are you recruiting international students?
No, not here. No. Okay. I do not have the power or the authority.
All right, fine.
And this is not my day job. But it's a job, it's a job that I learnt very quickly after a good couple of years of doing it, was that you need an outlet and you need a creative outlet. And I'm a gamer. I've played many forms of games since the Commodore 64 River Run and a very famous Christmas in my house.
All right.
through to, my renaissance currently in tabletop games. And this just was a very happy accident in the end, sort of falling into work, I guess. Yeah, you're right. I do work for Rule and Make. And so in that sense, I am an employee, but I'm not paid. I simply do it to help the guys out because I love games. I love what they're doing. I believe in what they're doing. On the flip side, they are quite happy to have someone help them out on this sort of side of thing.
And well, especially for free, obviously. What's that? Those cheapskates.
No, I think that's called shrewd business decisions on Alan.
So now that you're working in games, do you still have time to game? And if you do, what do you play?
I mean, I never really had time to game to begin with. So I've plowed the extra time I would have spent gaming into doing this. I think what it's done is it's opened up a whole range of tabletop games that previously I probably wasn't aware of. And now what my big challenge is finding games that are, what you were talking before about Ashes, the ones that meet the 30 to 60 minute mark and not the 2 to 3 hour mark.
Yeah, well, there's one that meets both.
Yeah, yeah.
It really doesn't.
I'm getting conflicting views.
The left, but look, you know, you're a young father as well.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I used to be a young father before becoming older and wider. But it is a really crucial gaming time. Yeah. I know I've talked about it a lot before over the last however many episodes I've been on, is that a game that delivers in that 30 to 60 minutes is so, so powerful.
Absolutely.
It's so much easier to find that time than the 2 to 3 hour behemoths that we do like to play. But we just don't have the time for all the time.
And I think we've been trying to find the two-player games, obviously, it's because my wife and I, for the most part, because trying to get together with three or four people and either babysit the kid or have someone look after it and someone else game, I mean, that's a challenge. So, yeah, the two-player games, Patchwork
fantastic.
Has been doing a better high rotation.
Oh, my God, you play Patchwork.
Yeah.
Patchwork is the game that just utterly does my head in because I guess because I'm old, I've got a very sort of stereotypical view of gamers as being old white guys because I am an old white guy. And Patchwork is a game about
buttons.
Quilting.
Absolutely.
And entering a quilt in a competition.
It absolutely passes the mum test.
Okay.
So my parents introduced me to tabletop games back when I was a kid, but it was, I don't know if you ever played Barricade.
I remember Barricade.
Barricade was amazing. And that was every summer. We'd take a trip out to the country, you know, over Christmas holidays and be Barricade. It'd be, there was Scrabble, Scattergories,
Mousetrap, whatever.
Yeah, those sorts of things. But then the other day, I, you know, had a copy of Patchwork and I finally relented on my wife who, like you, had sort of looked at the theme and went, buttons, patches. David, am I going to like this game? And I'm like, no. It's got really good reviews. Just trust me, darling. It's going to be fun. And then we played it. And she's like, hey, I get this now. This is fun. Let's do this. And then my mum saw the game. And my mum is like, oh, it's a theme about Patchwork. And that I used to do Patchwork and I could play this game. And literally the last thing my mum said to me as we left to come here to Tasmania for our family holiday, she said, have you got that Patchwork game? I think I might show your dad how to play that while you're away.
So on that note, David's here to announce Decoupage, the board game by Rule and Make. Now, no, as much as this is a love-in, we need to talk about some stuff.
Yep. Well, we need to talk about Winterforge, yes.
Yes, we do, because we left on a cliffhanger before that Ravi Shankar song.
So can I ask, having a Kickstarter fall over publicly I mean, that's and now, of course, you've gone back, given it a bit of polish. You've brought in the friend of the show, Ian O'Toole.
Yep. Yep,
to
that's right.
Work on the graphic design and the illustration,
yeah. Which is fantastic.
No, it is. Yeah.
So I don't think fallover's harsh, but the PR spin and me talking. And I think and I think it's unnecessarily harsh.
A lot of them do.
No, and that's it wasn't a failure. I think the really positive thing about pulling the Kickstarter was it did come from feedback. We took the game to Essen. Alan and Alistair showed it to some people, and we'd been showing it to a lot more people since we became more closely aligned with Table Tyrant. And we got some really good feedback. And it wasn't killer stuff. It wasn't stuff that was going to cause the game to be ripped up and start again. Because Aaron and Dylan had developed a really fun game. I mean, you guys have played the prototype.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose you've got to listen when you take a game about dwarves to the home of dwarves in Europe.
you do. And I was just saying off air, you know, that in this sort of Australian game scene, you know, this kind of big box game, you know, it's a bit of Euro, a bit of worker placement, that sort of thing. I mean, that's still quite unique from a local designer, but you go and take that to Germany and they're like, yeah, my mum made one of those. So my brother's working on that. And that's great because they have experience and they give that experience to you. And so that's where Ian came in. Ian came in actually ostensibly to work on Hand of Fate, which we'll get to in a second.
Yes.
But as part of that, one of the bits of feedback that we were getting was just fixing up sort of the bit of the iconography on the game board and sort of visually cleaning it up just a little bit, just so it was a little bit easier to play, a little bit more recognisable, drawing on those visual cues that, you know, the sort of the bigger Euro games have done time and time again.
He's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
And not throwing out
the baby with the bathwater, because there was some great art there to begin with.
Yeah, yes. But you've also got to make the game accessible and understandable from a graphic design and illustration point. Yep. And having a graphic designer and artist who's done The Gallerist and Vinyos and the upcoming Lisboa, he knows how to put stuff on a board and make it make sense in a pretty way.
Did you know he also used to paint fish?
Paint fish?
This is the thing I learned.
How did he catch them?
Well, no, so this is the thing. So Ian used to... Ian got... For a couple of years, he was telling us the other day, for a couple of years, he had this running commission to paint fish for the foyers of some Irish hotels that were near water sources back in Ireland.
Oh, fantastic.
And so, of course, you go and Google it and you can see all these fish photos and all the paintings. And it's like... trying to reconcile that with a guy that churns out this just amazing, jaw-dropping game design. And then fish.
Where's all right. Fun? So, Smiths.
Smiths, coming soon.
Yeah, like, coming soon.
Like, really soon. Like, I don't want to put this week on it, but I would say within the month, it will be back on Kickstarter. It will be familiar to people who saw it the first time through. It will be exciting to people who didn't see it the first time through. I think it's going to be a winner.
Well, the reality is it was on the cusp of funding regardless when it was pulled, so there's no doubt it'll have a lot of support when it comes back on. Now, let's talk Hand of Fate.
Yep.
Okay.
So exciting.
So this is a partnership with Rule and Make and Defiant?
Defiant Development, yeah. So for those who don't know, Defiant Development are a Queensland-based games developer, as the name suggests.
Yep.
But they do digital games, and they created this game called Hand of Fate, which was very successful, was on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And then went gangbusters on, you know, PSN Live, Xbox Live.
And it's another one of these digital card games.
Correct.
Except this one started off in the digital realm.
Correct.
So like your Heroes of Warcraft, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know anything about this game apart from the little bit of research I've done. So there seems to be a lot of really good hype going on about this. It seems to be really getting people's attention, which is great.
And so I'd never played the original Hand of Fate, full disclaimer there. I'd heard about it,
yep.
As you sort of do if you keep a cursory eye on these sorts of things. But ever since we announced that we were doing the tabletop version, the number of rabid, passionate fans for the digital game that have hit us up on social media or directly or indirectly has actually just been really overwhelming. It's been overwhelming in a positive sense.
Yep.
But then you sort of sit there and you go, wow, we have to deliver on their hype. And that is intimidating. Well, to me, it's intimidating. I'm sure, you know, Barantis has designed it and Alan and Alistair are all taking it in their stride. And I'm sitting there going, jeez, wow. We didn't have this for Burger Up, guys. This changes everything.
Stay positive.
And then the other side, you know, you've also got to keep in mind, like, Defiant, this is their IP. This is their baby. They developed Hand of Fate. That was their idea. Yep. They're doing a sequel, Hand of Fate 2.
Hmm.
And we come in and they've been so good. Morgan and the team there have been so enthusiastic about the project. They've been so supportive in terms of giving feedback, providing tips and tricks, and but also not
really not coming in forcefully and not saying, you can't do that. Everything's been pretty much fair game.
That's great, because they're based in Brisbane as well, aren't you? You're basically a cab ride away from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's quite the Brisbane game scene's quite an intimate little family.
I've seen some pictures of the prototype or a work in progress for Hand of Fate. It's a big red board. The artwork from the game is largely been carried over, I think, or elements of it anyway.
Yep, so...
And there's a lot of cards. Yeah, a bloody big stack of cards.
Yeah. I've seen the Google Sheet doing the rounds on our little Slack forum, which we use to communicate, and things drop off, things pop on, and it never seems to get any smaller.
Okay.
That's good.
More is better.
It's about hands. Of bait with cards, so that makes sense, right?
And will that be a Kickstarter as well? So is everything a Kickstarter? Is that what you're relying on for your business model?
No. At the moment, the campaigns that we're running, absolutely.
Sure.
But I don't think it's the be-all and end-all for how we go about things. Certainly, I don't think it's going to be, you know, we do 100%. And certainly, you know, on the discussions that we have, you know, as an organisation about the games that have come up and the designs we've been pitched and the other designs that are in the works that we potentially could publish, there is some discussions about, well, which of these has to be a Kickstarter, which one of these don't have to be Kickstarters.
Yeah.
At the moment, yes.
I don't mean that as a criticism because I'm old enough to remember a world without the internet.
Yeah.
God help us. Right? I don't remember what we did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm serious.
You went to the back of a magazine and you cut out the little voucher and you put your couple of bucks in, and certainly a couple of months later you'd get a pair of Spy X-ray glasses.
And you hope that they work the way they did in the comic
book. Indeed.
I did a course at uni that was called Internet Journalism.
Okay.
To which I tell people now is actually just journalism. But that was, I understand.
But... You know, it's easy now, I think, to take for granted a business model like a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe or what have you, the crowdfunding business model, because without it, Rule and Make and so many other organisations wouldn't be possible.
It certainly came at a very fortuitous time, and Alan Alistair has said that quite a number of times when we've been talking, and I've heard them say it publicly, you know, that Rule and Make was... going along nicely. It was one of, like, many places, like many designers and groups in Australia was, you know, developing this small suite of games, and then Kickstarter came, and it just helped with reach. It helped provide that funding and that sort of backing and support to make an idea come true. And it's certainly, you know, we were saying before about how we go about designing games and what we sort of put into it. I think we do want to keep that indie ethos. We don't want to be an Asmodee. You know, there's a lot of benefits.
Oh, come on! If Asmodee offered to buy you, you'd roll over and get your tummy tickled.
I would. I don't know about Alan Alistair. Absolutely. He doesn't want to be tickled by Asmodee. That's hilarious. But we don't want to be bigger than Ben-Hur. We don't want to be, you know, the game company that ate Australia. That's not the aim here. You know?
I'm writing that down. That's a great idea for a game. Yeah.
You're very meta. You know? No, we don't want that. I said before about family, it really does feel like it. I mean, I'm the outlier. I was saying to you guys off air, you know, I'm in Melbourne. And so the large part of my communication with the guys is on Slack and email and Twitter. So trying to be part of that is difficult. But we have, as a group, developed this collection of designers and artists and just smart people that get that and want to be part of that. And it's all very positive. And it's eclectic and diverse, and there are people on far ends of the spectrum, but it's amazing and just makes really great things happen. It's fun to be part of.
And that is a great thing about the Australian gaming scene from our involvement and from our little bit of introduction with a whole bunch of other designers and publishers in PAX and BorderCon and what have you. It's just such a open and inclusive family, which we love. And on that note, from our family, the Dice Men cometh, to yours, Rule and Make, David, thank you very much for joining us and taking time out of your holiday, unfortunately, which is in Tasmania. So
it's been great.
Yeah, you've had a good time enjoying our food and drink and scenery.
Obviously, this has been the highlight, guys.
Clearly. There we go.
Mona, a close second.
David Scott, PR poobah with Rule and Make Games. Maybe one day he'll get paid for it. Who knows?
I don't mind if I don't. It's a great...
is that the day that we get paid for doing this as well?
Maybe. This has been the Dice Men Cometh. We'll catch you next week on Itch Radio 99.3 FM. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for coming in again, man.
Cheers. Thank you.
I agree with Leon. Oh, I agree with Leon. Oh, I agree with Leon.
Summoner Wars to death, baby! It's fun being the editor.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.